in this series Voyager, if you look at the close-up shots, whenever they do a really nice close-up of Voyager, you occasionally see people in the windows. Well, they're actually people from the older Roughneck Starship Trooper Chronicles because they reused the models. So if you look, you can't necessarily see them that close, but they are the same people. So I guess Roughnecks and Star Trek are now canon together. Oops.
That's cool. Nice. I had no idea.
And you remember the Year of Hell episode?
Mm-hmm.
And you remember Babylon 5?
I've never actually seen that.
Do you know what the station looks like, roughly?
No.
Okay. Well, at the time, there was a lot of people saying, wow, Voyager stole Babylon 5 station design for the Year of Hell Chrome Time Ship. The joke being that the same team that built Babylon 5 built the Chrome Time Ship. And while they're different designs, they did reuse the same textures. So in essence, it actually is a very similar station.
Oh,
oops.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Well, now there you go. Now you know why Babylon 5 exists the way it is. The Krenim went to war with the Federation.
Yeah.
Ooh.
They changed it all.
All right. Well, that was our funny... Everything is related to Star Trek, folks. That was our joke. And the other thing related to Star Trek is this, the Final Frontier podcast. A show that's apparently so awful, we have to get a dude from another podcast to come and do it right for us. Let me introduce our host, the man, the myth, the musician, Adam Mullen.
Well, hello.
I am Bill Allen, a.k.a. the guy in the red shirt. And our host, our guest host, guest interviewee, guy going to end up taking everything over, Samuel Cockings. I say that right?
Howdy. Yes, I'm Samuel Cockings, or as the Trek Girls audience know me as Commander Cockings, but I don't go by that because Stuart invented that, not me. I'm just Sam.
So when are you getting promoted? You're going to be promoted before Harry Kim?
Well, I got the rank quicker than him of Commander. if you're inhabiting the world in any small way, then I do think age is important. You know, a captain shouldn't be a captain at 23. You know, already my age doesn't make sense. But when I get to captain age, if I do a good enough job, maybe I'll be captain. But I'm way too young.
See, you started your podcast and he made you a commander. I started this one and Adam made me a red shirt. So I'm a little jealous.
Hey, but you survived. That's more impressive. There are dozens of commanders. Very few red shirts are alive. So
yeah, for now. But, you know, if our ratings slump and they kind of started that way.
Did they ever peak?
We had like 4 people one time listening to the show.
Oh, my goodness. That's like a record.
Now my parents will join in, so you have at least 6.
There we go. So, let's see here. We've got some news, right, Bill?
Yes, we do. So, and I don't want to talk about it because I haven't seen it yet because I had to work. But let's talk about it. The Short Treks has begun.
Samuel, have you seen, or do you even watch Discovery?
Well, yes, I couldn't not. You know, it might not be the Trek we all want, but boy, is it worth watching. Yeah. You know, just for interest's sake. Yeah, I watched the whole thing. We did reviews on Trek Yards, and I managed to watch Short Trek because I couldn't, you know, be left behind. I was just intrigued. You know, all the feedback. You know, anything going forward, they have the feedback of the fans and of the studios and of the new creative people. So I needed to know where they were possibly going.
So in like a non-spoilerly, oh my goodness, I can't say the word. Without spoilers, what did you think of the Short Trek episode?
Me or Bill?
You, I haven't seen it yet.
All right, sorry.
I can't spoil it.
Oh, sorry, I was talking to you, Samuel.
Well, it's funny because Stuart doesn't like it. I kind of liked it. It was more tonally Trek than we're used to in Discovery. Even if the plot holes are just as big, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I totally understand what you're saying. Sorry, Bill. I guess you'll see.
I mean, telling me there's plot holes in Star Trek is like telling me Captain Kirk is going to sleep with an alien woman. Yeah. I'm okay with plot holes in my Star Trek because I was a TOS baby.
Yeah.
It always makes me laugh in TOS. There's six different, the strongest metal ever recorded.
Yeah.
It's like, you just use the one from last episode, please.
That fighting. It's that Kirk Fu, and it's one of those things that just that was. I mean, the fight with Khan was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, they make a big deal about the physical superiority of an augment, and Kirk whoops his ass.
And I want to take a class in Kirk Fu.
I want a class in Kirk Fu. No, it's kind of sad though. If you go back and watch Star Trek III and watch his fight with Kruge. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's an out-of-shape, middle-aged man, and that fight with Kruge was the best fight he ever had.
Yeah.
And I you tell me something is horrible and has hokey plots and has plot holes, and it's like, yeah, it's Star Trek. That's why we watch it. We love it.
I thought the story of the of Runaway was good. For the plot holes, I thought it was okay for what the story was. You know, they had to do it in 15 minutes. And I wish I could say more to explain, but sorry, Bill.
Well, the fact is, there is a bar set by Discovery where they don't care as much about making the plot neat and tidy. And so when you take on that, you know, to that bar, it was, I think, one of their better pieces, actually. Mm-hmm. Because it was, you know, Wrath of Khan is an amazing film for many reasons, but I think it stays amazing is because it's so focused. There's so few sets, but they're so well used, and it gets cheaper because of that. But because you're focused on the characters, mm-hmm. because yes. you haven't got the time for the VFX, the time for this. It's, you know, so having this all take place in a couple of rooms lets you focus, and focus is important when you actually want to know the characters.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, that's one thing I tend to say it a few times, and it drives people nuts. I will tell people that Space Seed was a horrible episode, but Wrath of Khan was such a good movie that its goodness went back in time and made Space Seed get on people's top 10 lists. Because
yeah, Stuart said some of the things, yeah.
I did want to say, too, I find your description of Discovery, that's an interesting take that I haven't heard before. It's like, it's not what we wanted, but it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I hadn't heard that before.
Well, it's an interesting show because it's proven that you can, as a new person that quote-unquote owns a franchise or gets to use the franchise, you can retroactively change important things like the shapes of the Enterprise, the uniforms. So it's interesting. Once you've set that precedent, this happens to be the era where the people want to change things. If in 10 years the next person was a big fan, you know, grew up with TNG, wants to change them back, you can easily retcon out Discovery. So it's a show that I'm sort of hoping they'll retroactively alternate universe it, because they've set a precedent where you can now more solidly change things, whereas Intramural Darkly, it was about recreating, and that was the point. And so it was, you know, we can tweak here and there, but it's about stylistic tweaks rather than anything major. So it's an interesting precedent they're setting.
Mm-hmm. That's something I'd wanted to talk to you about, because you do Trek Yards, and a lot of what Trek Yards does is a big analysis of the ships of Star Trek.
Yes.
And you guys do not just like the in-universe, there's a fourth wall, don't break it kind of explanation, yeah. but you do a lot of really neat, like, behind-the-scenes, why did they do this yep. way kind of thing, too, when you do it.
Yep.
And so, I mean, I haven't watched all of your guys' episodes because there's a lot.
No one has.
but, I mean, I remember it was discussed that the big reason why the Enterprise had a refit was because the camera technology and all that, the original ship just kind of looked like crap because you could do more with more detail. And that was the behind-the-scenes reason why they changed it. They tweaked it a little.
Which Enterprise? Do you mean the motion picture refit?
The motion picture refit. That was okay. The behind-the-scenes reason why they wanted to make it look good for the cinema, because they could do detail and they could
improve they had a budget.
Things. They had
a budget.
and it's like they originally were just making a really awesome model of the original that just it just didn't look good with the new cameras and whatnot.
Well, it's interesting because they did put a lot of money into the original miniature. That was one of the more expensive miniatures of the time, and that was absolutely, you know, ooh, this is an amazing miniature. Obviously, yeah, the Reef absolutely. Enterprise was also amazing for its time, but in a very different way. Although, again, Discovery goes backwards. When you go forwards, you can say, well, it's newer, more detailed, because it's the future. We change things in the future. It gives you an instant out.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a nice story-wise out, but I just... I was going to ask you, from your perspective, I mean, I've seen several variants, fan art and kit bashes and whatnot over the years where people have tried to do a realistic redesign of the classic Constitution.
Mm.
And, I mean, you've seen a bunch of those too. I'm sure. And, you know... Even though I know as fans we love to say you can't change what came before and, you know, people go crazy over the details, how would you rate the new Enterprise relative to some of the fan creations? I mean, what do you think about stuff they got right? And, like, because in a lot of ways it looks like they made some minor changes, tried to keep it looking as much like the Constitution, but just try to take some styling cues from the movie version to kind of make it look nicer. And then I've seen some redesigns where they do some very impressive things, but they have like weird indents in the nacelles. And as somebody who's really looked at these ships, how do you rate how well they did on the sliding scale? Is it in the middle? Is it the worst possible redesign for the classic? Is it, I mean, because I know we all want to say they should have just thrown it up there as it is with new CG to maybe add a texture to it so it looks proper in HD. But that's our nostalgia talk. And as a guy who looks at ships, I mean, how would you really rate the Enterprise, the new one, the latest?
Well, can I ask you both a counter question first?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we talk about the 60s design, and the raw design of it is still superb. You know, how, why, and what. But there's a conceit that I said to, you know, said at the start of Discovery and before it came out, that if you wanted to take Discovery as, the TOS, what we saw as a very blurry, low-resolution version of this thing, whereas if you were to do a modern retake tale, you would say, right, this is the shape of the bridge. We're going to take all the stations where they should be and the consoles and the chairs, but now we're going to go in and re-detail them to the nth degree, smoothing out shapes, making everything touchscreens, you know. So as if you put them side by side and then you just like clear away the blur and boom, beautiful detail. And that's what they did for Trials and Tribulations. You know, they knew that the D7 design was incredibly simplistic and that was one of its charms, but doesn't hold up very well now today. And even Eagle Moss, they had to do a good job in updating it. When they did Trials and Tribulations, they built a D7, had to be a D7, but they cleverly integrated parts of the Katinga design, but made a hybrid. And for fans, that was an instant, yeah, that works. It looks better, updates better, but is still... You know, it was an in-between step. I mean, did that ship look good to you? Do you remember the model shots looking? Were you acceptable of? Do you accept them when they came out?
Yeah, I am. But I'm one of those goober fans. It's like if it's Star Trek, I love it, and I don't mind changes so much because I like changes like this. I mean, part of it is because. Yeah, you know, I also get the nostalgia factor where you don't mess with the classic.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, even though I'm a TOS baby, my favorite version of the Enterprise is the refit version. I just love the style of the refit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I also liked the JJ era Enterprise. Mm-hmm. Except for those damn tail fins. I hated those so much. Mm-hmm. And every movie, they kept making them bigger, and it was just driving me insane. I hate it. You don't make the tail fins bigger. Stop it. Get rid of them. So I was not that upset when it got blown up because I was thinking next time they won't do tail fins.
I don't think many of us were. I think we well,
for
I mean,
various
the reason Justin,
reasons.
The reason Justin Lin blew it up was because he didn't like the design. I mean, that's why he got rid of it. I mean, that says enough.
I agree with it. I mean, there are a lot of... I mean, I liked the shape of the nacelles in the new version. They had this, like, 70s muscle car feel.
Just shrink them down. Just shrink the front by about 30%, and it'll be better balanced.
Yeah, you know, I mean,
starships need a balance. You know, it's not just function; it's aesthetic. I mean, they're building something that is the future. You can build it to do both.
I like that little bit of an upswell that it had. It did have a little too much, and they should have shaved it off. But if you get rid of the tail fins, leave just like the silhouette of an upswing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, just a little bit of a bulge there. You know, give it that. It's like you're looking at the curves of a 69 CUDA and as it like just slopes over the back tire. I love that line, you know. But
I know what you mean. But the second part of my question to you guys is, when we saw the exterior shots of the Defiant in Intermodal Darkly, it's swooping along in high definition. Same design, but updated texturing and higher resolution. I mean, did that ship hold up flying in 2004 with its high definitionness?
See, this is where I'm going to say no, but not because it was a bad design. And they did really well on that episode. But I put, even though everybody talks about how that's one of the best episodes of Enterprise, I personally tend to lump it in with their fan service crap episodes myself. I mean, the Ferengi, the Borg, the Flathead Klingon storyline, and the Defiant. I mean, it was nice. I liked the story for In a Mirror Darkly. The Defiant disappears. Enterprise investigates. Kirk gets trapped in this bizarre spacesuit limbo. Great story for the Tholian Web. But then they throw it in there, and I like seeing it again, but I can't really say I like seeing it again, not because it held up. And that was one of those episodes. It's like Enterprise had some great storylines, and it had some god-awful storylines. And they would try to throw in these fan service episodes to make the fans happy and put up with their garbage. And even though I liked where they went with the story, I consider it fan service, and it didn't wow me. It didn't stick me in the ribs. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, at the time, I would certainly consider it one of the best Enterprise episodes just because of what they managed to achieve more than necessarily anything else.
Yes.
Although some bits of it do lag. But just, you know, I think most fans would agree the Enterprise certainly looked good in the episode. It certainly was like, oh, it's clean, it's simple. It actually looks more advanced next to NX-01 because of its, you know, look at our iPhones compared to brick phones.
Yes.
I mean, the simplicity is where you go, and the Connie looked more advanced. Now, that's taking me on to now this visual reboot. It's not so much just the fact that they changed the design. You've got to look at it in the context of the franchise, because it's a 50-year franchise with, you know, 5 shows, animated series, lots of movies. For the JJ films, they said, alternate reality, okay, great, we can do whatever we want. For Enterprise, they said, we're 100 years ago, we're so old, we can do what we want, and it'll link, but it'll be a unique style. Discovery is so close to, you know, it's literally after Cage that we know exactly what existed at the time. And so now you've got to ask the question, the Discovery Enterprise, was the Enterprise refit after Cage within the year and then un-refitted? When you start doing that sort of question, then start losing integrity of common sense and thought, because it's not just, ooh, updating, it needs to fit, because all of the universe is meant to fit, otherwise it becomes separate, and then if it's separate, make it separate. So then once you say, oh, no, this is what the Enterprise looked the entire time, so now you've got to go back, and when you remaster DS9, you've got to actively redo Trials and Tribulations and replace Enterprise with the Enterprise, because now the previous one's not canon, because you're effectively erasing it from the timeline. Every time you see Enterprise, you've got to redo the visual effects, because it's consistent. You've got to do that. Now the Enterprise is 30% bigger. When they see the Excelsior and say, wow, that's a huge ship, you've now got to make the Excelsior 30% bigger. Oh, no, now it's bigger than the Ambassador. I mean, the Ambassador 30% bigger. Oh, no, now the Galaxy's not bigger. I mean, the Galaxy 30% bigger. And now suddenly all of the shots you see of the rooms, the corridors, the holodecks, the shuttle bays, none of them are in scale. So by doing one simple retroactive retcon, and the scale's a big one, you can actively damage the entire history, unless it is just its own thing, its own whatever, or it stays a consistent size with slightly more connection to being, you know, if it was the same size, you could argue refit. It'd be a stretch, but it could be a refit. Making it 30% bigger, just literally because they wanted to, it does sort of challenge the common sense factor, But that's the that's where these guys are going. It's more, we're looking at our show. That's the end of this conversation. This show is the important piece. And it would just be great if it was a separate piece to the main poll, because then they could do whatever they wanted. But it's, you know, they set up their own rules, and when they break them, it's like, well, this affects the entire franchise, and that does hurt the franchise.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. See, I'm one of those guys that I retcon it in my head that it's the same size. It's not 30% bigger. It's just, because I remember back in the 60s, they didn't really tell you exactly how big the Enterprise was at first. It took a lot of finagling from, because they were, like you said about Wrath of Khan, where they focused on the characters and they did it so well because they stripped away all the other stuff. When the original series came out, it was about the characters, and so they didn't do a lot of technical details.
Well, Jeffrey still worked out the scale from the first day. I mean, he knew the scale, and when they built it, they knew the window scale. I mean, that's one of the most consistently scaled ships in all of Trek.
Yeah.
It doesn't change. I mean, the shuttle bay might not make the most sense, but the full ship itself, and while not necessarily on screen per se, you can see next to a D7, which has had scale released. I mean, it does translate to other things. Every time you see it with other ships, it whatever's. But for the design itself, if it was the same size, then it would be a tremendous war variant. It has got more phases and more torpedo launchers. It's got, you know, the changed nacelles and pylons are because it needs to have a more efficient warp profile. You know, it's using the prototype engines. Everything on it is state of the absolute art, so it can get to the war side of things instantly. So you can make it really interesting if they had put the thought into it rather than just the aesthetical thought. And that's where people like Rick Sternbach and Andrew Probert, in the, you know, golden ages of Trek, they had to put all the thought in, because they wouldn't let it out of their sights unless they had done that. But now you have Trek that doesn't have that same thought. It does start to break down a bit, because we've grown up with this sort of amazing consistency, or at least attempted consistency, and then when they sort of break that, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I like to say something.
Sorry, I'm sorry. I've been...
Oh, that's okay. So I totally understand what you're saying, Samuel. And I agree with it, but for me, you know, I like to enjoy all of it. I can totally get into the whole, you know, where they need to then update everything so that it's all consistent. But for me, I'm just going to enjoy the show for what it is, and it fits the aesthetic. Now, the 30% bigger thing, you know, I don't really see why they needed to do that. But for the whole look of the Enterprise, I think it needed to be updated for everything else they did with the show Discovery. If they had used what it looked like, even in, you know, the Enterprise episode where we see the Defiant, it would not have fit. It would have been like, what am I looking at? I mean, you know, of course I know what I'm looking at, but in terms of that show, it wouldn't have made sense, especially if you're a new fan and you haven't seen any of Star Trek before, they would go, what is this? So I think they did it to attract new people, you know. It, probably at the end of the day, it's CBS going, give us money. But I'm going to try to be happy and just enjoy it for what it is.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, when you break it down to, I'll enjoy it as a show, then it won't have the longevity. It won't have the years after, because it's just, it was an okay show. It doesn't link to the canon, really. It doesn't link to, like, you know what I mean? It doesn't, whereas Enterprise, like, it's like, oh, damn, it's this weird prequel, and it does some really radical things, and some really cool things. Like, you can have conversations. If you just take it as another show, then in 10 years, it'll be, well, that was the 2018 show. Like, I think people are starting to, you know, people don't talk about Into Darkness because it was just, it was a movie, and some people hate a few bits of it, and it's gone by the wayside. Like, it was super thin. And Discovery is a similar thing. I do think the season 2 trailer looked excellent. And I've heard that, you know, Neville Page has been told to reboot the Klingons. He said drastically change, and that's thrilling, because me and Stuart would have a very compelling way of having the Klingons with Discovery Klingons work and actually deepen the culture tremendously.
I would definitely like that. I mean, of all the things that need to be retconned, I want them to retcon away Enterprise's explanation for why flathead Klingons are. I mean, change that. Make it non-canon. Make it an alternate timeline caused by Daniels. I don't care what you do, but that was a bad storyline. And I I want to see them. I want to see them keep mess. I like seeing them change things up because complacency is bad.
But it's about the stories, though.
It's about
the characters. So you should have a Klingon just like a Klingon in a story about a Klingon. You know, one of the worst things about the Klingons in this Discovery season one is that you don't get the acting. They're hidden under, so, and this is what Michael Dorn said literally 2 weeks ago. They're so hidden under prosthetics that the acting is so lost. The subtlety is so lost. They've got to overact in a simplistic way because the makeup and because the teeth. You know, we're rewatching the series in the first episode, the first scene with Takuvma. There's so little actual acting in his performance. He's just shrieking out the words and a little bit of eye stuff, but it's so not there because he can't act through it. If you gave someone in, you know, a Worf makeup, it would be full face. You'd get the eye, the cheeks, everything would be in the performance. But I do think they did that drastic makeup to hide Shazad Latif, because if they had normal makeup, you could see him and there wouldn't be a payoff. Although I still think just have two actors, it's full on biological surgery. Have two actors, it's fine, guys, just do two people.
Right.
I think that was literally why they said, well, we need this reveal, so let's make it a thing. But again, that's a silly reason to change the entire Klingon mythos and make them lose what was Klingon about them. It's bizarre, but that's, you know, Discovery.
I'm one of those rare fans out there who is I've always been unimpressed by Klingons, or at least the next generation Klingons. I mean, that's always been, I mean, I don't, all these people upset about what they've done to the Klingons. The Klingons were always lame. I mean, their battle cry is, it's a good day to die. Pretty much all of their tactics involve fight until the other guy kills us. This isn't smart tactics.
But that summary is that you don't like the Klingons as a race, so therefore invent a new villain. I mean, don't radically change the race you don't like, because that's how they've been.
I mean, there are aspects of the Klingons I do like, but I mean, they definitely needed an overhaul. I mean, I agree, the makeup was too heavy and the actors could not emote properly through it. It's very rare to get an actor that can do it. The only guy I could think of that really does emote well through heavy makeup is, I'm going to say it's Tom Holland in Spider-Man. Not Tom Holland. Who was the middle Spider-Man after Tobey Maguire?
I don't know. I never saw those.
They're worth watching.
Andrew Garfield?
Garfield. Thank you. I always want to say Andrew Webb, but I know that's not right. Webb was the director, and it fits so well for a Spider-Man movie to have a guy named Webb directing it.
Yeah.
Andrew Garfield was really able to emote while wearing a Spider-Man mask.
Hmm.
And just for him, I mean, he's a horrible Peter Parker, but he's a fantastic Spider. Tobey Maguire was a great Peter Parker, and his Spider-Man was meh. But, so, no, I totally get the point that you got to be able to let the actors actually act, and it's hard to do when your entire face is covered. But, yeah, definitely watch those two Spider-Man movies, because he emotes quite well. He's got a mask on, and it's not a CGI make the eyes move kind of thing. He's able to character emote with a mask on.
And we'll say the first one's pretty damn good, second one's pretty damn awful. So it's a weird, they don't balance out well, because the second one is really not good.
There were some aspects of the second one that were just bang on, but the entire,
plot.
Yeah, the second one, it's like that whole goblin thing. I mean, as far as doing the, it's probably too soon to spoilerize the shocking twist ending. I don't know.
I don't remember the ending, to be honest.
What's that?
I don't even think I remember the ending.
They did the death of Gwen Stacy storyline from the comics. And as far as doing a visual representation of that, they nailed it. But yeah, overall, I think there's got to be some kind of rule. You can't put more than one villain in a movie at a time, or else it goes bad. Because when they start doing that in any franchise, not just, it's like when you start fighting more than one villain at a time, the movie tends to be a little on the weak, like the Batman movies. The weaker movies are the ones where he's got more than one mega villain. Because, I mean, Tommy Lee Jones made a great Two-Face. And Jim Carrey was right for the Riddler. He had that right kind of manic zaniness. put the two of them together at the same time, and it wasn't as good.
So is it okay if we move on?
Yes, I'm sorry. Sorry. I was picking your brain about ships, and we're not here to promote your show. We're here to get you to promote our show.
Perfect.
We need to talk about we're a show about fan films, so we need to talk about more fan film.
Which one? So, I've been involved in many at this point.
So I think because you've got an hour, we want to cut to the chase here and talk about Convergence. Okay.
Ooh. Okie doke.
So, what can you tell us about it?
Brand new on Indiegogo now. It's when I wrote it. There's so many fan films that are another story. The director's trying to tell a story, but I wanted to make something totally unique in the environment of fan films, because this is my last hurrah, my swan song sort of thing. I wanted to make something that we can all be like, whoa, that was kind of cool. And so it's the first and biggest of its type crossover event between five different Star Trek fan films that have existed over the past decade, all post TNG, which is again a rarity, especially at this point. Mm-hmm. With fun CGI that I've done myself, some new stuff, and a real character piece that has a heart, that has a morality tale, that hopefully balances all those things together. Because it shouldn't just be about the visuals, it shouldn't just be about the characters, it shouldn't just be about and take what I've learned in the last 5 years and my filmmaking experience before that, so I think I'm like 12 years filmmaking experience all into this piece. That was a long summary, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay. What are the different fan productions that are going to be a part of it?
So we've got, now obviously I'm not allowed to all call them Star Trek, but for simplicity's sake, I'll say their original, because all these films are legacy now, so I'll use their original titles, but Star Trek Intrepid, which is Nick Cook's whole series from Scotland, which he's been running for over a decade now. Star Trek Dark Armada, same thing, over a decade, with Robin Hirt from the Netherlands. Temporal Anomaly, my own fan film, I was able to bring back two actors from it, which after a five-year gap of not having talked to two of them was just amazing to get to work with them again and see how they've developed. Republic, the Surface of Yesterday is their only released project so far, but Jim Van Dalton's coming in to play either ancestor, descendant, or just relative that looks the same, but is not actually the same man. And the sort of surprise one that I hope everyone's excited about, Star Trek Renegades, the now abandoned version of the Renegades project. And all of these five are the equivalent of licensed, official, this is not, we're all in this together sort of thing. So hopefully an exciting set of people.
So how did you come about asking all of them to do this?
Well, they all sort of fit, first of all, because I had the story idea, and it was the first two acts. I knew I wanted the first two acts straight away. And I had worked with Nick doing some visual effects for Intrepid in January. We got talking. I offered to do some, and we worked on that. And he's a really, really good guy. I like him a lot, and I want to work with him again. And I had this brand new ship design that I'd done, my own original ship design, and I wanted to tell a story with it, because I've done literally like 1,000 flybys, and they're hollow. They don't, they don't challenge you. So you've got to tell a story with it. You need a captain, you need a story, you need, and by bringing in people from other fan films, you alleviate the need for backstory, because they've covered that, which means you can tell a more tight story in the 30 minutes.
Yeah.
And in fact, give them character beats that enhance their characters. And I'd met Robin, he came to the UK a year or two ago, and he did an open call, who wants to meet up? And I was the only one that could. So we met, we got on really well. And then I brought, Jim in from Republic, because I really liked working with him on Republic. And then Renegades was, I planned it the entire time. And then only after I had something really strong to pitch, Sky Conway, with them fully integrated, I pitched it. And I got the yes, because he was so impressed. And we came to a good compromise. So I knew I wanted the Siphons as villains, because they were so fascinating in the first film. And used one of their ships and such. So it was kind of the story evolved very quickly from this ship, a story using characters, and then all these people be great together, and then sort of pitch everyone.
That's pretty cool. I mean, that's a lot going on. What are the different ship names?
I'm inheriting two of them. The Intrepid from Star Trek Intrepid, the Batavia the Nova class from Dark Armada. Mm-hmm. What we saw in Renegades was a custom Rick Sternbach, Scott Nakada design, and it was the USS Archer in that film. We are using the same ship, and the real model from Tobias Richter, he donated it. I mean, we had it anyway, but he donated it for this project. And that's the Columbia, the second of its class, as the Columbia is second of the NX class. It's, you know, the timeline references itself all the time, so I use that. And then my brand new ship, the Horizon, haven't quite invented the class name yet, and that's the hero ship. But it is really... It's as much a crossover as the event. You know, it's working title was Star Trek Avengers. In Avengers, each character is pivotal in their own way, in their own scenes. No one is just there as a cameo in the core set. So just in the same way, I say hero ship, hero actor, but all of them are thoroughly involved. Even the lieutenant in the story is a pilot. She's thoroughly involved. It's as much everyone as a group than, you know, Robin comes in and fires phases and then leaves. You know, it's a proper crossover event.
Mm-hmm. What kind of ship is the Horizon? Like, is it science? Is it what is it?
Have you guys seen the design?
Yeah, but you know, for people who haven't, you know, like looked at a lot, what can you tell us about it?
This is my first public outing of saying anything about it. So
you can say whatever you want or whatever you don't. If you want me to cut something up, take it out. Fine.
Hey, you guys asked first, therefore you get first picking, don't you?
Awesome.
No, it's a hyper long range explorer. It's what Voyager, if they were trying to design a ship to deal with Voyager's mission that ended up being, you know, was an accident, this was the Starfleet's attempt to design a ship for that mission, designed to go out to, you know, pass Federation space. You know, one thing that was in TNG is that every time, you know, it was a 5-year mission, or 7 years it ended up being, but they could always knit back to Earth, and you never got a sense they were that far out. Even TOS, they could always go to a space station, always go to a, you know, they're out, but they're always in communication range.
Mm-hmm.
This ship is designed to go outside the borders of space, beyond the known, beyond the communication range, be on its own, like Voyager was. So it's bigger, it's more capable, it's very much, it was launched the same year as Nemesis, so it's not a leap of technological advancement, but it's the refined edge of what we know for that era.
So does it use any special type of like warp engine?
Yes, it has 6 warp nacelles.
Oh my god!
With a further 2 sets of coil units, so it has 8 warp coil assemblies. And I've actually talked to some people that worked on Trek about this, and they were less keen about when I say you see a number of nacelles. Oh my god! But then you see it, and it's like, oh wow, they're all unique, they're all integrated, and you have a specific function. It's one special ability is that where Voyager's maximum warp speed is 9.975 for 10 hours, Horizon's cruising speed is warp 9.975 for 40 hours.
Wow.
So it's not faster than anything. The Prometheus is still faster, but it can do massive distance when other ships have to drop out of warp. And so that is the only thing it's special at. Is it's got a really powerful warp bubble that's super stable, hyper efficient, you know, deuterium and antimatter reaction, and it can go a lot further, a lot quicker, and not need as many stops.
Hmm. Very cool. Who's the captain? Can you tell us that?
Captain is James Monroe, who is the only captain in Temporal Anomaly, and it's great because he 5 years ago he was clean shaven and looked younger. It's kind of strange how much he's changed in 5 years. Now he looks more distinguished, and the uniform suits him better. He's got some wonderful beard, and so I guess he got promotion from the Mako, the Intrepid class ship from Temporal Anomaly, and now he managed to get his hands on the first launched hyper long range explorer.
So your Indiegogo is going on right now, right?
Yes, a couple of days only.
I think the last status update I saw said you'd been up for like 24 after 24 hours. You were already 15% of the way there.
Yeah, as a slow first few hours, but when I woke up, it was a good day. And now on the 6th of October, we're 29% already of our 5,500 goal, and still, you know, 27 days to go. So it's been a strong start, still a long way to go, and that, as you can imagine, we try to keep the number as low as possible to make it as achievable, But stretch goals, you know, we want to do more, but that's obviously up to fans. You know, we can make it for this, but if you love the project, we can do more for more. But yeah.
So your stretch goal of $10,000 as original shuttle, do you have any designs for that? Like, have you shown a design for it yet?
No, I'm a very busy chap, as you can imagine, and I have concepts in my head. I've already secured a builder who's very exciting, and he'll be announced if and when, but it's someone that might have ties to Trek that I think everyone will think, wow, that's cool. And I'm hoping to get an artist to work on it that, again, has some link to Trek. I'm being vague because we're super not there yet.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But I have a design concept. It's as much as... you know, TNG got a new shuttle for their era. Voyager got a new shuttle for their era. Enterprise E got a new shuttle for their era. You know, currently it's Type 11 from Insurrection, but that shuttle's, you know, 7 years old, and this ship's brand new. So I have a concept, I have shapes, haven't built it, haven't designed it yet, because again, that's the budget needed. But hey, it's more a case of if we get 10,000, amazingly, then there'll be another original thing. This will be even more like Renegades. Everything's original. You know, it'll be another part, and then, you know, it'll just add to the feel of the production.
Is there anything special about this shuttle?
Hyper long range shuttle. I mean, it's gonna feel very much in tune with the ship. But I like the limitations of what was done in the 90s in that they had to reuse sets, reuse shapes, reuse props, and by doing so, but having to tweak them to make them feel new, you create a consistency throughout the era. And so, I mean, because the whole point of the Horizon is meant to feel like a Voyager Season 8 ship. It could just be built, you know, if they had an 8th season. So the shuttle would be the same thing. And if you're building a shuttle, you'd have to use the runabout set, bridge set, because that's... you've got that. You're not going to build a new one. So there's things that I'm going to incorporate that will make it very much feel part of the era, but yet focus with this mission. And when I break down the mission further to the fans out there in further videos, hopefully see all of that in the shuttle design. But just as, you know, the type 9 for Voyager, type 11 for Enterprise Z, it's their custom, you know, new shuttle.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of perks are you offering?
Yeah, perks are a weird one, as you can imagine. And my way of sort of justifying it is keeping everything super internal to production. There's nothing that could be considered, you know, merchandise. You know, it's all the simplest stuff, but creative and bundly. So if you want to support, you can get lots of cool small things. So we mostly have posters, but all original art, two different styles, hyper-real ship art and hyper-cool sort of comic art. Then we also have some scripts. You know, we're going to get stuff. This is, you know, if you want stuff signed by these guys who literally had never met up together in the same room until I came along, having been friends for years, there'll be fun exclusives that will only ever come from this production. We're not ever going to do any more. So it's kind of, if you want to support this project, you'll get something cool. Might be kind of simple, but it's kind of cool, and it's certainly never going to happen again. And hopefully you like the art, because I'm trying to be artsy. So it's posters, scripts, you know, the classic executive producer perk, a voiceover role, and just bundles. If you want to get lots of everything at a huge discount, then bundles are the way to go.
Yeah, I see executive producer credit.
Always a classic.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of going perusing over your Indiegogo here, seeing if there's anything else I have questions about. Bill, do you have questions?
No, I mean, I kind of over-monopolized the beginning of it.
Oh, that's okay. I didn't mean to make you feel bad. If you have questions, go for it.
Yeah, about the story, the characters, the crossoveriness, the Indiegogo. You know, I like being thrown stuff I'm not expecting, so.
All right. Well, I mean, at the same time, I don't want to, like, give it away. I want people to want to see this, you know, and it sounds cool.
Thank you.
Okay, I will ask this.
Okay.
Given the history of fan films used to be nice and long, you could do a great like, movie. 2-hour-long episode with five crews, so that everybody's getting roughly 20 to 30 minutes. Like, it would be like having all five fan films, each one making a 20-minute film that all ties together. Mm. But with the new restrictions, how difficult was it? I mean, because that's something that's like, when you start cramming so many characters. I mean, and there were a lot of good projects in the past. I mean, you're naming fan films. I've actually seen these fan films. There's a lot of fan films I haven't seen yet, but the ones that you're linking to this, you know, Dark Armada, Renegades, I've seen these and I liked them.
They're pretty legendary ones, to be honest. I'm very thrilled to have them all.
How difficult was it? Because, like, basically everybody only gets, like, maybe 90 seconds of screen time. I mean, you're trying to tell a character. And I'm not saying it's impossible and the guidelines are terrible. You can tell a great story in 20 minutes, but you're telling five stories, sort of, in a way.
That's a really good question. Thank you. I will say it wasn't so much difficult as fun, if that makes sense. Because that's a hell of a challenge, as you say. Plus reintroducing Monroe, introducing this ship. No, it was really, really interesting, actually. First of all, I went back and I watched all of their content, everything, because I had to know their character voice. I had to know who they were. And that was amazing. First of all, go and watch Batavia, or Dark Armada, sorry, and watch Intrepid. I mean, they're really good as like, mini fan film franchises. And I worked on Renegades, so I did Renegades really well. No, it was challenging. It's interesting. When you boil down what a story needs to be, you've got, you know, the different acts, you've got where they need to go, the resolution. I like writing smart stories where there aren't plot holes. And when you start giving yourself that, okay, A to B to C to D, and everyone's sort of smart, there might be some twists, some turns, whatever. But it alleviates the, oh no, that isn't working. Oh no, shield's down to 10%. You know, you sort of streamline all of that, and you focus on the bits that are important. And for the crossoverness, it is just each captain that's coming over. Okay. You know, the leading of the ship. And they do have a secondary character each, but that is just the person they react to on the bridge. You know, it really is just the captain of each ship, because again, it needs to be focused. But every single character has a character scene. Every single character has interaction with each other, pretty much. And when we get to the last act, it does speed up in terms of pace, and we get lots of cool action, plot stuff, the payoffs of a few of the setups. Each character gets a reason to be there. And there is a slight underlying reason as to why they're all there. And this isn't a spoiler because I've given it away in the Indiegogo, but the basic storyline is that the Columbia, which is the Renegades-era ship, commanded by Will... whatever his second name is. I should look at what his name is. Playing Will Shepard. I thought Shepard. I'm sorry, yeah. So he's come back from the future, as is always a good or bad plot device. But the Siphons have basically destroyed the entire Federation. And we explain why. And it's, I think, quite a simple way of explaining that. And he's had to do a Spock-style, you know, time jump. And we explain why. That's never been done after, is because Section 31 classified it, and it's got a 1% success rate. Cool. But this happens to be the 1%, and Spock happened to be the 1%. You know, so it's kind of like it's a plot convenience, but we do give it a reason for everything. There isn't just a because, you know. And they come back 3 years before the war, but at a point when they can change the timeline. And so this captain now, at the edge of our known space, his ship is damaged. He's got, from a crew of hundreds down to dozens, you know, he's lost so many people over the last few years of the war. And there is literally nothing left, you know. And this is one of the questions. How far would you go to save literally every single life in the Federation? Is there a cost too big? Is there a line you can cross? Is there what is the answer to that question? And we never, in the plot, give a real yes or no. It's a grey, as it should be, but you can see both sides. And so he comes back and he picks these captains. He contacts them. Why these three captains? There's reasons for that. And why a Nova class? No offence, Robin. Why a Nova class? It's so small and inefficient. And there's actually an interesting reason for that. So the whole plot is very sleek. That's my catchphrase in Trek Yards, but I worked very hard for a fight to 30 minutes. There's a post-credit sequence, which is over 30 minutes, but we actually did a full script read on Skype, and I spent about 3 weeks doing the entire visual effects for the film, in super, like, previs, just to get a sense of what I wanted to do. And it did come out to about 30 minutes, so I knew this was the right track, and you can obviously tweak that when you get into it. But I was like, damn, this few, you know, 30, I think 33 pages, 32 pages, and that, there's the rule of thumb, 1 page, 1 minute.
Right.
So I was very conscious of that, but this is very much a film that is designed, built, you know, written in February 2018 to fit within the guidelines, at least as many as we could, and that's most of them.
So when can we expect the film to be released?
Yeah, I'm excited, because as I said, we did the previews for the visual effects of the film, so when we get funded, I can start doing the full. I mean, you've seen the trailers. I mean, the ships are, you know, Tempo normally was delayed so many years, so I kept increasing my quality, kept replacing models with better ones, kept replacing sets with better ones. This film, all the ships are basically final. Mm-hmm. Only the Horizon is still finalizing. And it's just to bring it to the same quality as Tobias Richter's models and others. My aim is June, honestly, is middle of next year. If we get funding, when? I'll say when to be confident. when we get funding, we'll you know, it's a lot of people to come to one place in England on the same weekend, because that's the whole mm-hmm. point. It's not, you know, we could film it in different locations and it would be okay, but this needs to be truly a crossover. Everyone in the same room, interacting as actors, not just as characters. And they did play with some scenes. I really, really loved the process. I mean, we have a great scene where Robin, Nick, and Chris all have a scene, and the chemistry was really there. I was really impressed, because it could not have been. You know, we were really lucky. Hopefully, you know, once we get the money, we'll say, right, what weekend in January, February, or March can we all seven of us do? And we'll book that weekend, and we'll film it. And you know, I'll be working on the stuff we've already filmed before that, the visual effects I'll be working on. Because once all the sets are done, it's just a case of the green screening, and I green screen quite effectively. So yeah, June is my goal, to release at least a version of the film. If we have the extended version with the backers that get us there, that'll take slightly longer, obviously, but we'll finish the main film first. And then, yeah, so I aim to get it done sooner rather than later, just to get it sort of off my plate.
Well, awesome. We look forward to it.
I mean, that is one of the great advantages of such a short production. 30 minutes is not a long time. It really isn't, mm-hmm. Especially when scenes need to be 3 minutes to really pay off. That's one thing I think a lot of us that are now doing fan films, it short does help. You know, it kind of does.
Bill, do you have any follow-up questions, or shall we wrap it up?
Just one. Because, I mean, it's, I don't know if it's a question or an observation, because we did start by talking about the new short tricks they're coming out with. And I like hearing you say that short helps, because that's something I've said. I like the idea of trying to cram, like, Star Trek, damn it, needs, like the first 15 minutes of Up is probably the greatest short film in history.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like a guy's whole life and his whole love story in 15 minutes. So it can be done, and it can be done well, and damn it, Star Trek needs that in its films. Do you think, I mean, I have no idea what my question is. I like the idea of short films, and I like that you're able to put so much in a short film without it having to be too busy. That's what I want to say, I guess.
Yeah, I'm pushing those boundaries as far as I can in terms of what I can get out of the 30 minutes. Because this could easily be a 40-minute, you know, inverted commas, episode, you know, right. Although actually that would pad it a little bit. But I compressed it to the most important things. Each character, they get a character scene that is for them each, that develops each story, each character story. You'll have scenes together as a general. You get exposition scenes, you get action scenes, you know. It's these several people, you know. Someone asked me on Facebook, are we going to show everyone's crews? And it's like, well no. I'm trying to raise 5,500 and I only have 30 minutes. I mean, it's, yeah. It, you know, and if you watch a lot of the episodes, you know, it cuts to Janeway saying, fire! It doesn't cut to the entire bridge looking passive and one guy pressing a button. You know, you can cut things down very efficiently because you need to. And that was certainly a fun challenge. You know, Temporal Anomaly, which is 55 minutes, I think, is the running total. That was a lot more fun to edit because, you know, it's all character. You know, it's character and plot, and there's fun reveals, and you get time to have a slow beat. And there are a couple of slow beats in this, because you've got to know when to put them. But I also don't have time to dilly-dally. you know. Mm-hmm. No, it was fun more than challenging. I had a lot of fun writing the script, and Nick Cook was great and helped me finalize the third act, because I managed to cut a nice chunk that wasn't necessary, and that really helped.
And I don't want to add something that'll stir the pot, but I am kind of curious, because each of these films was somebody's baby.
Yeah.
And you're now was it an effort to be collaborative where you had everybody kind of put input in the script, or did you make this did you ever have to pull rank on somebody and say, this is how we're doing it? Because they're like, I want my baby to have the blue ribbon.
Or the shiniest suit, the shiniest moment, yeah.
Right. I mean, everybody's got their own idea for where they would have taken their story 5 years later.
Yeah.
Did you have to convince people, or was everybody on board? Or did you make any changes to your story concept based on their input?
That's a really great question. Yeah, thanks for the question. So I did specifically, when I got them all signed on, I went back and watched all of their content. So I got a sense of who they were. And I got a quick blurb, but didn't quite summarize who they were from Nick and Robin about their basics. And that, knowing when they're born doesn't quite help you write a script. I wrote the script, and at least the first two acts, well, Nick helped me to refine the third. When I had done that, I sent them the script, and I was nervous because, as you say, this is their babies. And I was really pleasantly surprised that Robin said, I want to change one line. Apart from that, I love it. And I was like, damn, okay, nice. Nick said basically the same thing, but he just wants to play with it on set, but he loves it. He thanked me for some of the little bits I did. And then Chris and Nim, who plays Lieutenant Anna Keeley, they're both actors, hobby actor and acting lecturer, so they took the script and said, I'm a professional. Although I will say that the first person I brought on was Nimran Sorn from Temper Anomaly, actually. I sold her on who the character was rather than the story. Well, she liked the story too, and she said, just make sure this is represented in what you told me is in the script. And she said, for a second draft, make it a bit more, just for in terms of passion. So that was a small thing, but apart from that, and Renegades, the Sky Conway, it's his fan IP, as it were, his variations. I'm using only his original stuff, and he loved the story. He loved how I was enhancing the Cypher mythology. He was very happy with that. And they're a very passive partner because they're not involved in production or in scripting or anything. They just said, yep, story sounds cool, approved. Just don't say we're working with you per se. I was really thrilled. And on set, everyone made tweaks as they were going. I know Robin changed a few words. And that's great because that's in their shooting scripts. And we're going to offer those at some point as, the four limited edition first filming session scripts that have all their custom tweaks, which, you can never get again. But they're all great. I mean, I think I made Robin change one line back. But it was like three words that he swapped around. I was like, oh, it doesn't quite work. And he was like, no, I understand that. But no, it was really very positive experience. I think they all just enjoyed seeing what I would do with their characters. It was a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Very cool.
All right, and now the last question from me, because this is a 30-minute fan film.
Yes.
And the guidelines say fan films are limited to 15 minutes, but you can have two parts to make it 30 minutes total.
Yes.
Are you going to have a dramatic cliffhanger in the middle to make like a big part one? Oh my God. Are you going to have that best of both worlds moment?
Yeah.
Awesome. I mean, cause I think there'd probably be a good place just to cut it and say, this is where we're stopping. You'll get part two later. Did you try to aim for a best of both worlds moment, or did you,
So if you watch Indigo video, you sort of get a sense of this. But, they as a fleet have to go from where they meet to stop the Siphons. The halfway point is as they set off.
Okay.
So, like, all the action – well, not all the action stuff, but, the payoff is in the second half. The setup is in the first half, but there is actually quite a nice little middle point. And obviously, if we get the donor exclusive extended cut, there'll be some stuff in between that, because that's also the point you can add. If it takes 6 hours to warp, you've got some time to do other things. But yeah, there's actually a nice little neutral point. I didn't really necessarily intend to be, but it works quite well. And it might not necessarily fit at the 15-minute line, it might fit the 16-minute line. But CBS has said, obviously, you know, that number can be massaged, but not a lot, but some. I mean, I'm sure if it's 15 minutes plus 45 seconds of credits, you can read that into its 15-minute film with 45-second credits. I mean, it you know, speaks for itself. And obviously, I you know, if it's two parts, it has two sets of credits. I mean, so you're doubling the credit time. So that's, you know, yeah.
Awesome.
Well, Samuel, thank you for being with us and answering our questions.
Yeah, you're welcome. I had a lot of fun talking about this. My first, like, since Indigo came out, proper sort of get deep down. And thanks, guys, for asking serious questions. It's nice to talk about it seriously. So yeah. Thanks so much.
So, Bill,
you got us on a good day for that. Normally, we're horrible. Yeah.
No, I've watched you guys. You guys are good. You guys are a really nice vibe. I've always liked listening to your stuff.
Well, Bill. Yeah.
All right. That's our show for today, kids. Thank you for tuning in for another fantastic episode. This has been The Final Frontier, a Treksphere podcast. Special thanks to our guest, Sam Cockings.
Thank you.
Check out his Indiegogo and check out Convergence as soon as it's finished. Like and follow us on Facebook. Find us in the iTunes Store, on Google Play, and YouTube. I am Bill Allen, a.k.a. the guy in the red shirt. And this is Adam Mullen.
Goodbye.
Always remember, no matter where you go, there you are.